WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave. In the first half of our show, we heard a 1985 interview with Charlie Hayden, one of the original members of the Ornette Coleman Quartet. In 1969, Hayden launched his own group, the Liberation Music Orchestra, whose music was inspired by democracy movements around the world. 10 years ago, he founded his group Quartet West, whose sound pays tribute to film noir, detective novels, and jazz and pop singers of the 40s and 50s. Hayden grew up in a family of singers who performed on their own country music radio show. Terry Gross spoke again with Charlie Hayden in 1996 about his distinctive interpretation of jazz and how Ornette Coleman influenced his musical development.
Now, when you were young, in your early 20s, I guess, you started playing with Ornette Coleman's group. When you first met Ornette Coleman, which was before he was known to anyone, what was he doing that coincided with what you wanted to do?
I'd been going to a lot of jam sessions and playing in L.A. with a lot of different people, and sometimes I would hear, I mean, I love playing on chord changes. That's the reason that I love this music, and I love improvising on beautiful changes that inspire you, but sometimes I wanted to stay on a certain part of the song and keep playing, and sometimes I wanted to play on the inspiration of a piece rather than on the chord structure, but I mean, I couldn't put it into words back then, but whenever I tried to do what I was hearing, people would get upset. And when I heard Ornette play, that's what he was doing. I mean, that's the way he played all the time.
How do you think your playing was permanently changed by playing with Ornette Coleman?
Well, it wasn't changed. It was really deeply affected. I mean, it was a way that I learned about listening to the musicians that you were playing with at the moment you're playing with them. It's so important to listen to everyone. And that's the way it was really affected by playing with Ornette. Plus the fact that I developed this really strong desire, to play with my whole life on the line, to be willing to give my life for every note I play, that every note is really, really important, each note for people to hear. You know, the reason that we're playing this music is to bring more people to this art form so that they can see that it's a beautiful art form and it can touch their life in a really great way and enhance their life, and that there's an alternative. You know, this music is an alternative for people to know about and to experience. So I think that's why we were all playing. That's why I play now, is to bring people near this art form.
Let's hear something that you recorded with Ornette Coleman. Why don't we hear Focus on Sanity? Those listeners who didn't like Ornette Coleman's music, what you were playing with him, found the music discordant. Do you think that there's any contradiction, or is there a connection between the period that you played with Ornette and the kind of really like lush, almost romantic, moody music that you're playing now with your own group, Quartet West?
No, because it's played with the same desire and passion and urgency to make new music, to create something that's never been before. And that's the way all the musicians in Quartet West plays, Ernie Watts and Alan Broadbent and Lawrence Marable, they approach music that way. And I really don't think that there's that much of a difference in what we're doing in Quartet West and what I was doing with Ornette. I mean, a lot of people have to categorize things, you know, and this is the avant-garde, and this is and this is traditional jazz, or this is whatever. And I really believe that any musician that makes an impact on this art form, or any other art form, for that matter, they play beyond, at a level beyond category. So it's all one necessary endeavor to me.
Bassist Charlie Hayden, talking with Terry Gross. This is Fresh Air. Now back to a 1996 interview Terry Gross recorded with bassist Charlie Hayden.
What part did you sing with your family when you were a boy? And your family had a country music radio show and performed country music all around.
I sang all the harmony parts. I couldn't wait to get to the studio every day. I loved it. Every day, my parents would choose the songs that we were going to play out of their vast library of songs from the Carter family and the Delmore brothers, and all the hymns that we had, and we would go over them, and then we would go on the air. Sometimes we had radio studios in our homes, wherever we were living. We moved around a lot, but mostly we would go to the studio at the radio station and do our show every day. I loved going to the studio, and I liked the air conditioning and the acoustical tile, you know, the acoustical tile and the big windows, you know, that had triple, quadruple glass. And this was back in 1945, 46, 47, 48, 49. It was a great experience.
I can't believe you had radio studios in your home. Would you do remotes from your own home?
Yeah. Where I was born in Shenandoah, Iowa, we were on a radio station there called KMA. It's still there. And my dad moved our family to Springfield, Missouri, in the Ozark Mountains. And my grandparents, my father's mother and father, had a farm outside Springfield, and my dad always wanted to do farming. So he got this farm down the road, you know, gravel road. I went to a one-room schoolhouse there, Bellevue School, and in our farmhouse, my dad had the radio station come out and hook up a remote thing where, you know, those the things that you ring where you turn the crank?
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, he used to turn this crank, and the ring would go into the studio in Springfield, and that was a signal for us to go on the air, and we'd start the theme song. And we did it from our show from the radio, from our home, from our farmhouse, for several years before we moved into the city. And went over to the station every day.
So did you play in churches and at revival meetings and stuff in addition to singing on the radio?
We played in churches. We played personal appearances all over. And my parents were on the Grand Ole Opry quite a few times.
You know what I'm wondering? If singing at churches and other like religious events, revivals, whatever, if that gave you a sense that music had this spiritual potential in it?
Well, the hymns especially that we sing, you know, and then my mom used to take me when I don't know why she chose me to take, but I was the one child. She had six kids, you know. I had three brothers and two sisters, and several Sunday mornings, quite a few Sunday mornings actually, when I was around 9 years old, she would take me to the African American church in Springfield. There was just one of them, and we would go in after everyone was there. We would kind of like quietly go in the entrance, and we would sit in the back row, and we would just listen to the choir. It was like one of the most beautiful things that I've ever experienced in my life, to hear that music, the spirituals and the gospel music, and I'll never forget that. Yes, I had a really early contact with spirituals and hymns, and I had a feeling right away that there was a spirituality in music. I mean, you know, when you talk about jazz, I believe 85-90% of improvisation in jazz is spiritual. You know, it's a spirituality that's you can go to school and learn the academics of music and the fundamentals and scales and chords and composition and all that, but when you start to play and you tell a story to people and you take people on a journey that you want to take them on, it's all about spirituality.
Charlie, a recent album of yours is an album of spirituals, hymns, and folk songs, and it features you with the pianist Hank Jones. It's an album of duets. Are any of these songs that you used to do as a child?
Yeah, we used to do Abide With Me and some of the other hymns that we do, Amazing Grace, on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, every hymn that's on Steal Away, we used to sing, and Hank and I chose which hymns and which spirituals. He had a lot of spirituals. Hank was from the spiritual part of it, and he knew all these great songs. And you know, my favorite one that I've ever heard him play was "It's Me, O Lord, Standing in the Need of Prayer," and that's the one that I heard on the Smithsonian Collection of Jazz Piano. That inspired me to do the record with him, and I called him as soon as I heard it, and I said, "Man, that's one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard. Could we play spirituals together sometime?" And he said, "Charlie, I'd really love to do it. Let's do it." So we did it.
Why don't we hear that spiritual that you just mentioned, "It's Me, O Lord," and this is from an album of duets with my guest Charlie Hayden and pianist Hank Jones. The CD is called "Steal Away." My guest is bass player and composer Charlie Hayden, and this is from his recent album with Hank Jones called "Steal Away." You stopped singing as a child for a while because, I guess you stopped singing altogether because of polio?
Yeah, I had bulbar polio, which there was an epidemic going on in 52, and we were in Omaha, Nebraska. We had a television show there. This was right before my dad retired from music, I got this virus, and it paralyzed. I was really lucky, actually, because most of the hospitals were filled with polio patients, and it was all paralyzed lung, you know, function and legs, and mine hit my vocal cords for some reason, the left side of my throat and my face, I eventually, the doctor said I was a very lucky guy, and I eventually got over it, but the thing that I couldn't do anymore, the range in my voice kind of left me. I couldn't sing. I loved singing. but I wasn't able to sing anymore.
So what's the connection between the polio and not being able to sing and learning to play bass?
Well, I really don't know if there's a connection. I was playing bass before I had polio. I mean,
oh,
I didn't realize that. I was playing my brother's bass. He wouldn't let me play his bass, but every time I could sneak into where he kept the bass, I would go in and play it, you know, and I love playing the bass with records that we had, and then when I was 14 in Omaha, I was in the ninth grade. They had an orchestra at school at North High, and the orchestra director wanted me to play bass. When he found out I play bass, he said, "We need another bass in the bass section of the orchestra." And I said, "I can't read music." And he said, "Well, I can teach you." So he took me down to the band room. His name was Sam Thomas. I'll never forget it, man. And he showed me the first page of the Simandl book, the bass method book, and all the open strings were there, and he said, "Now I want you to practice playing these with a bow. This is a G, this is a D, this is an A and an E, and practice this while I'm gone, and then we'll start on the half position, and we'll go to the first position to where you press down the strings, you know." He said, "You're playing this anyway by ear, you know, with the little band you have here at school, but now you're going to know how to read it." And I said, "Great." So he left the room, and I started getting real nervous, you know. I mean, I got this anxiety attack. I said, "Oh, my," you know, I looked at these notes, and I was bowing, and you know, and all of a sudden, I thought I was having a heart attack. And, you know, I was, can you imagine having a heart attack at 14? And so, man, I grabbed my chest, I put the bass down, I went out and ran out in the hall to the water fountain, and started drinking all this water, and a couple of students came up to me, my friends, and said, "What in the world's wrong?" I said, "I think I'm having a heart attack." I said, "Charlie, you're out of your mind. You're not having a heart attack." I said, "I think I am." And Sam Thomas came back, and he was cracking up, man. He said, "You're not having a heart attack, Charlie. You're just, you know, learning how to read music."
So did you finally overcome your fear
about
it?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I played with the school orchestra. It was really great, and
that probably opened up a whole new world of music, too.
Yeah.
Music you'd only have access to if you could read.
That's right.
Well, Charlie, I'd like to go out with something from your new Quartet West album. And you end the album with something called Now Is the Hour. It's the title track of the record. And you say it's a Maori farewell song. How did you learn this song? And tell us something about it.
I used to listen to this song on the radio during World War II. Bing Crosby recorded it, and it sold millions of records, and Vera Lynn, I believe, in England recorded it. It was a very well-known song during World War II because it depicted, you know, the guy going off to war and his wife saying, you know, when you come back, I'll be waiting for you, but we must say goodbye now, and I just love this song, and you know, I have a lot of songs that I have from my childhood that I'm saving up to do with whatever band that I hear it with, and this was one of them. And then I was speaking to Alan Broadbent, who's from New Zealand, about the song, and he said, "You know, that's a Maori folk farewell song." And I said, "Well, I guess that's where it came from." You know, so I knew then we had to do it because Alan also was close to the song, and so we did.
Would you sing the song as you remember it?
Well, I'll try. Now is the hour when we must say goodbye. Soon you'll be sailing far across the sea. While you're away, oh, then remember me. When you return, you'll find me waiting here.
Charlie Hayden spoke with Terry Gross in 1996.